Today I'm doing a request talk. Kevin Gill asked me a few weeks ago if I would consider an adult child's responsibility to an aging parent. And then Pete repeated that and asked me because I think y'all had talked about it at one of your retreats and you wanted to talk about that. I really hesitated because I said, is this really spiritual in the sense that Sunday school ought to always be based in Scripture? And the minute I got to thinking about it, a verse of Scripture came to me that is on my wall in my study. And it's this. I wish you could see it. It's two stick figures, and this stick figure is just a stick figure, the head all bent over and the shoulders. And over here, the stick figure is really, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. And bent over there, and then there's a burden on top of these two. And I'm so glad I remembered it, because I hadn't had it off my wall in years. And I took it off, and it was given to me on Father's Day by our daughter Brenda years ago. And she said to my faithful burden bearer, I love you, Brenda. And I was so happy to be reminded of that. And when I thought of that verse, I said, that really is what we're talking about. We're talking about bearing each other's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. As we all know, the first commandment with promise is honor your father and your mother. And so parent-child relationship is important enough to put it among the 10 commandments. And so it makes it extremely important. And then if we go over to 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, we run into the whole subject of love. And this is involved in the family relations. So let me see if I can give... I'm not going to try to organize a talk. I'm going to do more of a visit about this because it's too complicated to organize. We're dealing with individuals, and each individual is unique. Each circumstance is unique. You don't have the same relation with your parents that I may have with mine or somebody else has with me. And so let's think in terms of general principles that we can apply. And so I'm just going to talk to you about them for the time we have. I think the first thing I'd call to your attention is that your attitude toward aging not only affects how you age, it affects how you look at other people who have age. In America, we don't have a good concept of aging. Everybody's supposed to say young. Our whole cosmetic industry. I used to be head of one of the cosmetic companies in New York, and I asked one of our copywriters, I said, when you write copy, and they're the highest paid copywriters, you know, in the business of the cosmetics, I said, what are you saying? He said, hope. That's what cosmetics is, hope. And so in our, we have to say, what's our attitude toward aging? It colors your treatment of aging people. And it colors your respect for yourself. Now let me point out the two extremes. Some people feel it's absolutely the pits. I was talking to a doctor not long ago, and he said, old age is hell, isn't it? I don't really feel that way about it. Maybe I will when I get there. At 81, I don't think that qualifies yet. Here's the way, those who feel like it's the pits, here's the way they react. They deny it. How many fellas you see trying to be macho way beyond? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense at all. They're denying the aging process. Delay it, that's your cosmetics. Disdain it. And by that I mean, you think of old people as useless. A corporate executive was telling me the other day of his boss, and he said, I'm not going to spend any time or any money on anybody over 50 years old. Now, he was in his 30s. You can see what he thought about old age. And I don't consider 50 ancient, do you? Really? I don't think of it as useless. But he did. And so you go from that extreme to this one. This is the one I like. Mary Alice years ago gave me a plaque. The best is yet to be. Grow old along with me. The best is yet to be. The last for which the first was made. And this to me is a positive philosophy of aging. Now, see it this way. Aging becomes a challenge instead of a threat. Nearly every major situation in our life either is a challenge or a threat. If it's a challenge, we approach it positively. If it's a threat, we approach it negatively. And so aging, if we make it a challenge. But in order to make it a challenge, I think we have to manage it, not endure it. Fully expect that aging process has to be managed. The finest thing I've ever heard on this came from Eric Erickson, who is a professor at Harvard in psychology. He said, the challenge of old age is the management of deterioration. This is an extremely realistic approach. The challenge of old age is the management of deterioration. As I see it, what you have to do, you have to have a core of your life that has integrity. And you keep at the core integrity. I'm not just talking about morality. I'm talking about total integrity. And you move the deteriorating parts to the periphery. Now, things that are once in the core eventually go to the periphery. For example, sex, when you're young, should be part of the core. As you age, it becomes pleasant but not urgent. And therefore, you move it to the periphery. Now, looks with a woman is extremely important when she's young, attractiveness. As she ages, she accepts that with graciousness, and she moves it to the periphery. It does not stay part of the core. Now, as I see the core, here are the four words that I think about as involving the core. Health, wealth. I only say wealth because it rhymes with health. What I mean is financial independence. Relations and usefulness. Now, when you're talking about health, you have to realize there are four areas of our health. We have spiritual health, physical health, emotional health, and mental health. Now, let me tell you something that's been very helpful to me. A lot of times in the morning when I get up, I don't feel well. And I have found, though, that if I will get active in the area of my health that is healthy, it washes back on the other area. For example, if I physically don't feel good, I immediately start doing something mental. Because most of the time, my mind is healthy. And so I will get into an area of health of my mind and get excited about something, reading, thinking, writing, and pretty soon I'll find that I'm physically feeling better. Now, if I were to stay there and just stay with the physical health until I got feeling better, I'd be in trouble. Now, of course, there's some days I just feel bad and I'm going to stay feeling bad and nothing you're going to do to straighten me out until you give me sympathy. But now that's the old pity party. That you can't afford too much of that. But if you will keep the areas of your health and act in the areas of your health, it will wash back into the other areas and will give you a much better balance. Now, for example, in the wealth, I simply mean financial independence. I am seeing a lot of people today who are not preparing for retirement, not preparing for old age. They are closing their eyes to what is the reality of it. And it's going to be a serious situation. They say, I'll cross that bridge when I get there. When they get there, it won't be any bridge. There'll just be a big hole, and they'll fall in it. Now, I never underplay the importance of money. I don't want to overplay, but I never underplay. Because money is optional. And without money, you have no option. Money is means. It's not end. But it's important. And so the third thing is relation. Today in our society, a lot of people, I was reading it the other day, a lot of people consider other people by their usefulness, not by their dignity. And you find that they change friends, just like they change automobiles and they change everything else. Because when a person quits being useful to them, I've gotten used to it. I've had people just come at me wide open, you know, for 3 or 4 years and then drop me. I don't feel badly about that. I quit being useful to them. Now, I feel sorry for them. They're not building a life of relationship because they're looking at everybody by their usefulness, not by their dignity. And so you don't build long, wonderful friends. I met Bill Glass when he was a sophomore in Baylor. And we have been, see, Bill's father died when he was 14. And so Bill adopted me as his father. And he tells everybody, Fred's my father. And down there, you felt that relationship. That's long term. That wasn't based on usefulness. That's based on the dignity of each other, that we care for each other. And so relation, for example, you'll find that as husband and wife, you better be careful that you become friends, not just lovers. I told him down there about a talk I did when I was down in Baylor back in the early 50s, maybe late 40s. They had a old maid, I mean, a unmarried lady, and a better term, an unclaimed jewel. And and they had her and a bachelor actually holding a seminar for marriage. I can give you their names. And their title was, Are You Fit to Be Tied? And that was the students. They had this marriage. They asked me to speak, and I chose a different title, and it darn near threw me out of the class. I may have told some of you. I said, keep the headlight burning, the taillight may go out. And they nearly threw me off the college campus for that. I don't know of any better advice. Really. Mary Alice and I have been married 59 years. If we weren't friends, and she's in poor health, if we weren't friends, it would be terrible. Last night, she came over to the sofa and sat down and held my hand. She said, aren't you glad we get along? I said, wouldn't it be horrible not to like each other? Here we are together nearly 24 hours a day. We're friends. And friends are so important that you make friends out of your lover. And that's a relation. Now, usefulness. Everybody wants to be useful. I'll touch this a little bit later. But here's the important thing. Old people need to know that it is more being than doing. It's more important to be than to do. This is part of our theology. We're not a works-oriented theology, but we are a works-oriented society. And it's what you do instead of who you be. I'll touch that again later. Now, let me talk about the relationship with older parents. I always suggest that your parents be older than you are. And here are three words that I find very important when I'm thinking about this. Knowledge, understanding, and patience. Knowledge, you need to know something about old age. I read this book years ago and have kept it, and you know, I read it again, and it's much more important to me now. B.F. Skinner, you know, of the psychologist of Harvard, he wrote, Enjoy Old Age. He said that's not a command, it's an invitation, because you can't command people. But enjoy old age. You can look at that book. Man, I have just marked it all over, because there's so much that you can learn about the aging process and what happens when we understand it. And so we have the knowledge of it. Years ago when I started at Mayo Clinic, they told me, said, Fred, we don't know enough about geriatrics medicine. We're guessing a lot of times because our research doesn't go up through your age. And I think with the medicines and things like that, we're finding this. And so it's becoming a greater specialty, and we're learning more and more. So knowledge is an extremely important item about old age. The second thing is understanding. And understanding simply means not knowing the general information, but knowing the specifics about the individual. People don't age as a society. People age as individuals, and they age differently. So understanding the individual you're talking about, and then the patience. Let me tell you,
If you're dealing with older people, you better develop some patience. Patience is a discipline. And patience has to have a consistency. Our people can't trust you. If you have a consistent patience, they can trust you. Now, let me give you a few suggestions. They're not in order of importance at all. But when you're dealing with an older person, start the communications early. Based on this, what if? Then take all the situations you can think about. What if you die? What about the will? What about finances? What about these other things? What do you want to do with your property? All the kind of questions. What if your health fails you? Do you want to go to a nursing home? Do you want to live with us? What do you want to do? What if? Now, you can't answer all those questions, but you'll be a whole lot ahead if you'll just take a piece of paper and write down what if, and you deal with it that way. See, what you're trying to do, really, is to know what to expect and how to handle it. I was taught in management that the good manager has very few surprises. Maxie Jarman used to say to me, Fred, a good executive has very few surprises. He is prepared for what comes. And so start the communication early. Make it honest. If the other person senses that you're not being honest, it's worse than not communicating at all. And communicate in detail. The third thing, and let me say, up to their interest, not to your interest. There's a big point there in communication. You communicate their interest, not your interest, because your interest is curiosity. And their interest is what you want to talk about. The second thing is define their status as an old person. If they're going to live with you, they're not coming as a guest. They belong in the family. No old person likes to feel that I'm a guest. I want to belong. And it's very important that the in-laws project that feeling. I know one of our son-in-laws said to Mary Alice, if Mr. Smith dies, we sure would like to have you live with us. I can't tell you what that meant to her. That the son-in-law would say. You know, we tell a lot of jokes about our in-laws and so forth, but there's some great relationships. I remember one time a fellow said, asked this fellow, what are you going to give your mother-in-law for Christmas? He said, nothing. He said, nothing. He said, no. He said, she didn't use what I gave her last Christmas. What'd you give her? Cemetery lot. And the spirit of the status is so important. For example, it is our opportunity, not our obligation. It's love versus duty. Girls, can you imagine your husband coming home and saying, it's our 25th wedding anniversary, and it's my duty to give you something, what do you want? You'd say, forget it. You don't do things for your relatives out of duty, you do it out of love. Opportunity, not obligation. Now, the third thing I'd suggest, and that is keep a sense of humor. And it's very important as you get older because you do so many things that embarrass you. And humor is the great antidote for embarrassment. For example, inconstancy. That affects a lot of old people. It's a very embarrassing situation. You know, I could tell you several jokes there, but the most practical thing I know is a fellow bought clothes that looked the same wet as it did dry. But you're talking about practical things now, because when you're talking about old age, you're talking about that kind of a problem. The other is memory. The memory starts to slip on you, and you have to maintain your sense of humor about it. Actually, I lose words now from an audience, And I just have to stop and laugh and say, hey, I lost that. Somebody suggest what it might be. Are you? And they are glad to cooperate if you treat it with that way. Or like Groucho said, you know, I never forget a face, but in your case, I'll make an exception. Like I told the ones, I told the folks down at Baylor, I said, now, I'm in that fortunate period of life when I drift in and out of senility. And when I'm agreeing, when you agree with me, I'm all right. When you're not agreeing with me, I'm senile. And so we laughed about it. Very important, because embarrassment is just part of growing old. Third thing I would just suggest is this. Expect and understand the reaction to changes that they have to go through. You haven't had to do it yet. When you change your lifestyle, that's a major change in your life. That's a major change. For example, if you lose your independence, if you can no longer drive, tremendous thing. You can't drive. You lose your mobility. Or you lose your health and have to be waited on. These kind of things. When you change lifestyles, you have to recognize that as a grief. It's a loss. It's a grief. And you treat it exactly as if somebody lost a spouse, or they lost their wealth, or they lost someone else. They go through the grief process. And sometimes you don't understand the stages that they're going through, because you don't understand what it is to lose a lifestyle. Now, there are certain stages that you go through. For example, in grief, the first stage is denial. It didn't happen. Second, shock. Everything just becomes cloudy, confused. Third is anger. Here you'll see them actually get angry at God. They'll get angry with their family. They'll get angry with circumstances. They just get angry. That's natural. That's part of the grief process. And then finally, they'll come to an acceptance. I mention these four things because you watch those steps and you help them through them. The bad thing is when they get locked up on one of those. If they get locked up on the denial, or they get locked up on the shock, particularly if they get locked up on anger, they can become very bitter and cynical people. And then you move them through to acceptance. You know, the ways you can tell that they're in this kind of a period is what I see as a used-to syndrome. I used to be able to do that. I used to go there. I used to dress like that. I used to know them. That used-to syndrome is saying, my life has changed, and I don't really like it, but it's changed. Now, some of these symptoms I'm going to give you, you're liable to think that you're older than you had thought you were when you came in. Remember, these are for the older people. Fourth thing I'd suggest, and most changes are viewed as loss. Most changes with old people are viewed as loss. Let me give you a few of the losses that hurt. You see it. Lost interest. People used to be very vital. Don't seem to have much interest. Let me suggest it may be energy, not interest. When you don't have energy, I mean, things just don't look the same at all. And when you lose energy, there are two things you have to do. One is you have to expect the change and abide by it. When I traveled with our son, went out to Vancouver and around Canada this past month, I had to say to him, hey, buddy, I'm about as far as I can go. Now, I'd be very foolish not to do that. If I'd act like, oh, you know, if he can go, I can go. No, that isn't true. So I have to tell him, what is my limitation? And we have to ask the person, what is your limitation? And bid. The other thing is you have to redirect your energy. And the other thing is you have to look for things that give you energy. I've had the saying for a long time, There's nothing wrong with me that excitement won't cure. And that's about right. I have to find excitement in life because I need the energy. Accomplishment, need the energy. And you also have to realize that older people have a slower recuperation time. When I came away from Baylor on Thursday, it was Sunday before I felt like anything. I didn't get upset about it. I expected it. Recuperation takes longer as you get older. So when you're dealing with older people, don't expect them to recuperate after a night of rest. Now, another thing is the loss of coordination. It's very embarrassing. As we get older, our body just loses coordination. For example, we spill, we drop, we stumble. We can't get things done as fast. Let me make this suggestion. Be patient. Don't help them. It's kind of like listening to a stutterer. You know, when somebody stutters, if you try to say the words for him, he realizes you recognize his impediment. Just keep an interesting expression on your face until he finds the word. I watched Mary. I was trying to put her pocketbook back in her pocket, and she just misses it, and, you know, she has Parkinson's. And, no, it'd be easy for me to say, hey, let me do it. When I do it, she feels helpless. And she'll say, let me do as much as I can do. She doesn't need to repeat that to me often. I need to learn that she wants to do as much as she can do. And so you just simply wait while she has problems with that. Hearing, for example. Hearing makes a person seem like they're out of it. You don't hear what's going on. And so you just get this kind of imbecilic smile on your face to act like you're there. And you would like to be there, but you're not there because you don't hear what's going on. And a lot of times, older people hear in the middle of a sentence. They don't concentrate as well. And so they pick up in the middle of the sentence and they get the reverse. You say, I'm not going to town. And she picks up about going to town. Well, when are you going? That isn't what I said. You have to give them concentration time to get with you on the sentence. Sometimes you have to stay away from noisy restaurants because older people, they can't hear in noise. Seeing is the same thing. And a lot of women, particularly, just don't like to wear glasses. And they'll ask you what it is, and you'll say, what is it? Get your glasses and see. Read the instructions. No, you just have to have some patience there. Because seeing is one of the problems. And also, here's another one, it's loss of focus. Priorities get flattened out. They don't have the urgency. And they lose focus. When they lose focus, you can help them with discipline. Let me give you this quickly. Keep them on a schedule. We think when we are real busy that a schedule is a curse. Let me tell you, when you get old, it's a blessing. Because there's nothing worse than facing time that is not allocated. Nothing means, you just got too much of it. And you wake up every morning not knowing what you're going to do. Schedule is extremely important. It puts meaning in your life. Be sure the medicine, they follow the medicine. Be sure they follow the food. Be sure they keep up relationships. Mary Alice does it to me. Every time I come back from the office, she says, who'd you talk to today? Well, what she's saying is, are you keeping up your relationships? Now, another thing on personal appearance. Older women probably go to the beauty shop, and they should. I used to deal with some, I hate to say I used to talk at the insane asylum, but I did. And and they tell me out there that one of the first signs of insanity is when a woman quits caring how she looks. When she quits caring how she looks, they know immediately that her mind is beginning to slip. Keeping up rituals is very important. In the family, in the church, keep the attendance. Hobbies, I've got to rush. A loss of memory is another thing that you have to be patient with. The wonderful thing that I've found, memory and thinking are not tied together. But nearly every older person I know, when they start to lose their memory, think they're losing their mind. Not at all. You may be losing your memory of certain. I may not know Joel's name, but I know Joel. I may not know what to call this, but I know how to use it. Did you ever realize how much more memory it takes to use something than it does to call it? And so you still have a lot of memory. It's just that special memory is getting. But people who are older, their memory gets to be an embarrassment, and they think they're losing their mind. Only less than 6% of the people suffer, old people suffer with senility. There are several things you can do there that I won't have time to tell you, but we'll do it. Now, let me mention this, and that is the loss of hope is the most damaging of all. This is when depression sets in. I have lived now for about 3 years with serious depression, with morale, clinical depression. I had no idea what depression was. You don't cure depression with slogans. You don't say, oh, buck up, feel better, think of all the good stuff. I mean, there, you know, I don't have anything to do with it. There's a worthlessness in depression. And many times you have to get it clinically treated. But also, I think you have to be very patient with it. And another thing is you have to constantly, in your whole attitude, everything about you, you have to practice the presence of gratitude. If there's anything that will fight against depression, it's gratitude. Can I just tell you in 2 minutes now the other things that I think are important elements? Express love. Not only verbally, touch. It didn't occur to me until I read about it that old people are not touched much. You have a tendency not to touch old people. I went back to hugging my mother. I just subconsciously quit hugging mother. She's old. And I started hugging her again. Meant an awful lot. Just touch. And pay attention with regularity. A friend of mine at IBM writes his mother every Saturday. See, she doesn't have to worry about on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, where she's going to a letter. She knows when it's going to come. And so she doesn't stay in this suspended sense of where am I cared for? And so the regularity is very good. Again, give them a reputation to uphold. Most of us work very hard to uphold a reputation. I think Fred's given me one. When we talk about anybody that's been a friend of mine, he always asks me, did he finish well? Did he finish well? I think what he's saying to me, Dad, I want you to finish well. And he's given me a reputation. He's given me a role to play, which I think is important. One of our employees, when I was with UNESCO, was dying in a sanitarium with tuberculosis, a nondescript fellow, so to speak. I went out to see Wally. Wally said, Fred, I haven't amounted to much in business. I want my family to see how a man dies. I'll never forget standing on the ground and waving at Wally up in the window. The last time I ever saw him, he wanted to show his family how to die. I think this other thing, that is, make respect for age a tradition in your family. Remember, how you treat your parents is exactly the way you're teaching your children to treat you. And your children will read that very, very clearly. I've often said, my children don't do what I preach to them. They do what they saw me do. And how you treat your parents, you can expect. And this last thing, accept death. I was listening the other night to this Muslim master, Nasser. He said, death is the only time you can be sure that you're doing God's will. I've never thought about it. I'm not sure I really believe it, but it's interesting, isn't it? Let me tell you this last thing. Billy Barrett's, Cliff Barrett's wife, who is Billy Graham's, you know, song leader. Billy was dying, and we've been great friends. And she looked up at her family who were all gathered around, and she said, "I wouldn't mind dying, but I hate to be away from my family." And her son, who is a minister, said, "Mother, where are you going? Every day is 1,000 years. So we will be there in just a few minutes by your time." And with this, she quietly died. Accept death. It's natural. And we have the wonderful hope of the resurrection. And resurrection means reunion. Finish your business with your parents. Don't let them die and then leave you with guilt. Finish your business with them. Take care of them, love them. And you will fulfill the law of Christ. Heavenly Father, thank you for the opportunity of visiting together. Sometimes we don't feel too spiritual about things. But Father, you created life, and you gave us life, and you gave us responsibility, and you gave us relationships. And we are to carry them out as you would have us carry them out in the spirit of love. And may we share each other's burdens and so fulfill your law. For it's in Christ's name we ask it, amen.